Tactopia. Tactopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, AM Hub, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tactopia. Denne sommer, nærmere bestemt den 20. juli, der er det 50 år siden, at mennesket landede på månen. Derfor så har jeg besluttet, at Tactopia laver en lille serie på 3 afsnit, der handler om rummet. Det kommer til at handle om at bo i rummet, det kommer til at handle om, hvordan vi kan overleve i rummet, og det kommer til at handle om at finde liv andre steder i rummet.
Okay, engine stop. System, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Det er 50 år siden, at ørnen landede på månen, og Neil Armstrong han steg ud af kapslen og sagde det berømte ord om, at det er et lille skridt for et enkelt menneske, men et stort skridt for hele menneskeheden. Men rumforskningen stoppede jo ikke med månelandingerne. Der er et nyt månebaseprojekt på vej, som vi tidligere har hørt den danske astronaut Andreas Mogensen fortælle om her i Tactopia. Men der foregår også en masse andre spændende ting, og den kommer vi til at høre mere om i de her udgaver af Tactopia. Det første afsnit her kommer til at handle om et tysk rumforskningsprojekt, hvor man på den ene side prøver at finde ud af, hvad består livets mest basale bestanddele af, og kan vi genskabe liv, som det blev skabt i ursuppen i et laboratorium. Og så tager de også ud i rummet og leder efter tegn på liv. Det er et forskningsprojekt, der er baseret i München, og det er ledet af professor Dr. Andreas Burkert, som er astrofysiker. Jeg mødte ham til konferencen DLD i München i januar måned, hvor han fortalte om projektet.
I'm Andy Burkert. I'm from the University of Munich, and I'm an astrophysicist.
Could you tell me about your new project, Origins?
Yes, the Origins cluster is funded by the German Science Foundation to search for life in the universe and try to understand how the universe as we see it today could unfold from simple initial conditions laid down in the Big Bang. One of the major ideas or questions we want to answer is the question whether life is inevitable, whether it naturally emerges due to the evolution of the universe. Which of course also means that life is everywhere in the universe, that we are just one of many life forms. So we are then not alone in the universe.
And what is the approach? How will you do this?
First of all, we will try to uncover the history of the universe. With the physics we know and the physics we still need to discover, we try to make a booklet of basically write a history of the universe from the beginning till the formation of the Earth and planets. Then we will look for life on other planetary systems and try to figure out whether life exists in the universe and under which condition life could form. And we actually use our labs in order to generate the first primitive forms of life within the lab. Yes, so we want to identify the conditions on the early Earth where life emerged. And we also identify the building blocks of life that already exists in outer space. And then we would like to demonstrate if you have the right conditions far from equilibrium and take the molecular content, then you will generate a generation of molecules that replicate, that transport the knowledge, the information they have about their structure to the next generation. And that is basically what we define as molecular life, molecules replicating and then through Darwinian principle becoming more and more adapted and more complex. We believe that's how life formed, in this kind of simple replication process in the early Earth. And that's what we want to generate and demonstrate in the lab. It is very likely that we'll generate something that is not seen on Earth, that is a different life form. Because life is probably everywhere else, probably different to us, which is also beautiful because it demonstrates our perspective is too narrow and there are many, many different ways you can generate life. But I'm sure we'll see something because we have all the ingredients together, we have the best people working in this, and we see basically early life or kind of the early conditions for life now when we look out into young planetary systems. We hope that if NASA, let's say, or ESA, or whatever lands on Mars, they do find remnants of early life on Mars, which is again maybe a molecular form, which was kind of stored there, still available as information that life started on Mars in a different way. And you just have to find one new life form, which wasn't on Earth, and then you have shown that life can really pop up everywhere in the universe. Because either there's only one life on Earth, because there's something rather, rather peculiar for life to form, and that was on Earth. Or if we find life on Mars, then it's likely to be everywhere. So I think we'll not go out into space, send probes with our molecules into space, but we will send probes into space to detect planet atmospheres and analyze them. And we will send probes into space in order to search for objects and physics we can't understand, which is the mystery of dark matter is one of these examples. Dark matter is the stuff out of which all the structure in the universe formed. Nothing would exist without dark matter, but we don't have an idea what this dark matter particle is made of. And we have an idea that if you are in outer space, dark matter might interact with itself and generate remnants and leftover parts of this interaction that we can detect if we have a little space probe out there moving through space and looking for these kind of events. And so that's what we want to generate, these space probes, send them out into space and look for dark matter signatures.
And well, you have 7 years to do this?
We have 7 years, 42 million. And then there's the possibility for another proposal to another extension by another 7 years and 42 millions for a total of 14 years of exploration. And we'll see how far we get in the first 7 years. And if we do well, we hope the German Science Foundation will fund us another 7 years to continue.
So to be specific, what is the end goal after 7 or 14 years?
After 14 years, we want to have generated in the lab the first replicating cycle of molecules and show that Darwinian principle work. We would like to identify planets with atmospheres that have the signature of life on them. We would like to understand how planets form. We have no idea. We have such a multitude of planetary systems and not a single working theoretical model of how these planets arise. We would like to understand, are we unique? Is our planetary system completely different to all the others, or are we one of them? Where was our sun formed? We don't think the sun formed where we are now. It might have formed completely different place. And how did the universe have the potential for all of this to emerge? One of the most fascinating aspects of our universe is that you start with very simple building blocks, and then through the interaction of all of this, something rather complex emerges. And this emerging phenomenon is something I would love to understand. What is the physics of emergence? It's something that happens when many different parts interact and connect. And a beautiful example is self-consciousness. It is an emergent phenomenon in your brain, and you have no idea where it is. Actually, if you cut your brain apart, you destroy it. And that has been the old physics. We all everything cut everything down to the basics. But in this sense, we would destroy the complex universe. We need to take everything consistent into account, and only through the complex interaction can we understand how everything came into existence. That requires also a lot of computing, a lot of numerical simulations, and we need a heavy computing in order to understand this complexity, which is one of the also very strong funded parts of this new excellence cluster. We call it, it's basically a center for computing and statistical analysis and big data analyzing, which we'll need in order to understand how this complexity works and generates new things through the interaction.
So what you're actually doing is sort of trying to find out what it means to be a human.
Yes, exactly. So, well, yes, that is a very interesting point. Is that related? Well, it tells us our origin and maybe our future. But it might tell us even more, because the fascinating question, is why are we so curious? Why do we see this universe and we love it and we find it fascinating? And it's an emergent phenomenon in our brain, maybe, but it is, I think, the most human thing you can think of. For whatever reason, the universe without human would be, or without intelligent life, would be boring, because it wouldn't be able to figure out how beautiful it is. It just needs us to understand it and find it great and exciting. And I think that's one of the reasons we are around. And so if we wouldn't figure it out, we would not do what we are designed for. We have at the both universities in Munich, we have a unique group of astrophysicists, biophysicists, and particle physics people, and fundamental physics people, and they are working in their environment on their own stuff. And we said, this is enough. Now let's put it all together and try to answer the big question of the formation of the universe. And luckily, they agreed, which is not that easy, because you first have to find a similar language. What a biophysicist calls a proof is not what a physicist calls a proof. So we have to find similar languages. We have to define similar ways of publishing, in the sense, how do you give credit to whom? You know, if you're in particle physics, if you publish, there are thousands of people on the paper. How do you know whom to give the credit? In astrophysics, it's simple. You have 5 people on the paper, and the first person has done most of the work. But this is now different. So how do you give credit? How do you judge who is good, who is bad? We have to define similar languages. This is part of the interdisciplinary enterprise. And it's fascinating in itself, because it generates the future of scientific research.
Amazing. What do you hope to find yourself? What is your hope for this?
So my personal view is, or my hope is, first of all, that we demonstrate that we can go into space and detect dark matter particles and look for planets, that here in Bavaria we are able to launch a rocket and do this kind of experiment. I think that would be just fascinating, and the vision. I personally would like to understand the origin or the nature of dark matter. I would like to understand, are we unique or are we just one of many, in the sense how the solar system is made of. I would like to know, how many planets are out there that might have life, and is life out there, and how can we figure that out? And I would like to understand really why our universe has this property of the emergent phenomenon. What is emergence? Now, under which conditions do you get something like self-consciousness? Can you promote it? You know, it's just so fascinating. If you sit in a group of a few people, if the conditions are right, a new idea pops out. And most of the time it just happens. It's like, something completely out of the air, and that is an emergent phenomenon of the interaction. And I would like to understand it more detailed and want to control it. I want to understand under which conditions we can enforce this kind of new insight. And then I want to apply it to science. And I would like to bring all the scientists together, forget about walls and competition, and then work out the most deepest question, like, are we alone in the universe and why are we there and where will we go? I think that is so fascinating. Everybody has to talk about it.
Can I ask you one more question? When you say you want to analyze dark matter and you're going to use CubeSats,
yes.
How does this actually work? How do you do it?
So there is, from our particle physics in the origins clusters, tell us that dark matter particles can interact with themselves. And there are many, many dark matter particles out there because they make the most of the mass of the Milky Way. And this interaction produces a photon and some remnants which have low energy. These low energy things you can't see on Earth, because it's basically interacting with the atmosphere and everything, and there's no way you can identify it. But in outer space, where there's nothing else around, you can easily identify those leftover parts of the annihilation of two dark matter particles, because there's nothing else. And so that's the idea of the CubeSats. They have basically a grid which can detect any interaction going on within the CubeSat. And there are many dark matter particles all the time in the CubeSat, and that might tell us something. And if it is a signal which we cannot understand by any processes we know of, it's new physics. It's not necessarily dark matter. It could be anything else, but who cares? It's new physics already. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm. But why hasn't this been done before?
Yeah, well, you need a group that is focusing on this question. And we have groups in Munich-Garching that do it in Gran Sasso, for example, and in a big mountain where they have detectors and look for signals of dark matter particles moving through the detectors. But this combination of scientists excited in dark matter, the combination of scientists who predict what kind of signal you should get, you know, I can tell you how many dark matter particles are out there and what the rate is to have such an interaction. But the interaction happening and what signal it produces is given by particle physics. So some particle physicists must be interested. Then we need someone who builds the space, the CubeSat, and someone who launches it. And this combination seems to exist just in Munich. So that's why it is unique. And maybe in the future it will be done anywhere else, but by then we'll have already done it.
And then you want to compare the molecules from the lab with what you find in space?
Yes, well, basically see energetic signals, radiation, that can't be explained by any source we know. And then it is probably a result of the self-annihilation of two dark matter particles. That's the idea and the hope. And well, we can do many more with that. You know, these were just two ideas, detecting these planets without the atmosphere disturbing us and looking for that. But you can also look back onto Earth, and you can look at the chemistry of the outer Earth atmosphere, and you can do a lot of studies that are useful for anyone else. So for me, it's just simply a start. And because we have all details worked out, something we can do in the next couple of years. And then, well, but you know, science is advancing so fast that in 5 years, I can't tell you, there will be something else much more interesting what I'm talking right now about you, and it would be a shame if we then wouldn't do that.
Okay, I'll come back in 5 years then.
Perfect, I'm looking forward to that. Thank you too.
Thank you.
Okay, engine stop. Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Jeg mødte professor Andreas Burkhardt på DLD, Digital Life Design Festivalen, i januar i München, hvor han fortalte om det tyske forskningsprojekt, der har fået rigtig, rigtig mange penge, så det kan komme op og flyve, så at sige. Blandt andet så bruger de et lokalt raketfirma i München, der altså laver rumraketter til at sende deres forskningssatellitter ud i rummet. Du har lyttet til Tektopia, der har været en tur i verdensrummet. Du kan finde mere information på tektopia.dk. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@tektopia.dk. Forvent ikke lige et svar med det samme, fordi jeg holder egentlig sommerferie. Du kan også deltage i diskussionen på Facebook, på vores Facebook-gruppe Tektopia. Backstage hedder den. Og du kan følge programmet på Twitter, @tektopia.dk. Og med det er der jo bare at sige på genhør, god rumfart og god sommer. Tektopia. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, AM Hub, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia.